Mr. Stonehouse, Reel 2. You were talking about your jump into the field.
That's right, yeah. Then we got the... we were welcomed by the receiving... the French people on the ground there. And... but we were told immediately that the chateau where we were supposed to spend the rest of the night had been raided by the French police, so we had to have to leave the area as soon as possible. And this we were about I suppose 8 or 10 kilometers from Loche, which was the nearest station. Now we were right next to the demarcation line, and also I had 100,000 francs on me. Which was supposed to last me for 6 months at least. In those days, it was worth quite a lot. And but the French said, "Oh, you can't walk around France with all that money on you. We'll keep you just keep 10,000, and we'll keep the rest." Of course, I never saw the rest of the, you know, the 90,000. I don't know what happened to that. Anyway, I got the twins, you know, they weren't twins, the brothers Newton. We separated right there, and I never saw them again. But I walked to Loche and got a train at 7:30 in the morning at Loche to go to Limoges, because I had a rendezvous in Limoges with Philippe de Vomécourt. And this was the 1st of July. I also discovered that my ration tickets were out of date. That's another thing. They'd forgotten to give me ration tickets for July, because in those days you'd have new ration tickets every month in France.
So this was because your first drop was
I don't know why I wasn't given the July ones, because what happened was almost ended in disaster. I wasn't able to eat, to buy food. Except there were a few things, you know, like peaches, where you didn't need tickets, you know, ration tickets. And so I ate so many peaches. It was there were lots of peaches, you know, beginning of July, that I got sort of dysentery. And for about, you know, for a long time, I could never look at it, another peach. Then I got into this train at Loche, in a second-class compartment. I'd walked down this dusty road, by the way, in the very early morning, in no traffic, nothing. I mean, very conspicuous when you think of it, when you look back. And but no, I didn't meet anybody. And I went through some little villages to the station at Loche, and I got into this 7:18, as I call, train for Limoges. Change at Châteauroux.
Was there any problem on the train?
Well, no, there wasn't any problem on the train, except I got into this compartment. I think it was first or second class compartment, I forgot. Anyway, it's one compartment where the seats face each other, just one, you know. And there's a door to each compartment. And there's only there's no one in the compartment except one French woman there. And after this train started, we started saying nice day and so on. And she looked at my shoes and said, "Oh, I love your shoes. My brother bought shoes exactly the same as yours in London in 39. I mean, can you imagine them? How I felt, you know. I'd barely been in France a couple of hours, and there I was only being noticed because the shoes were conspicuous. Because by that time, you couldn't buy leather in France. So the first thing I did when I got, I think it was Lyon, eventually, I bought some shoes made of raffia. Because by then, people were wearing wooden soles on their shoes. You just couldn't buy them.
What did you say to her? About the shoes.
I forgot what I said.
um,
I don't know if I may have said, oh, I was in England also in 39. Oh, I don't remember, but you did say that. And it's only when afterwards, you know, I think that was pretty terrible, actually, to send me to France with shoes like that. Because I had this beautiful suit I was sent to France in, but they did go, you know, it was made to measure here in London. And then it was aged artificially, you know, with sandpaper and put through, you know, a vacuum cleaner bag in the vacuum cleaner to get it all sort of, you know, and make it look warm. But the shoes, something I wouldn't have thought about, you know, I didn't know about, because I hadn't been in France.
Did conditions in France surprise you from what you had remembered?
Well, they didn't surprise me. I wasn't expecting them to be as I remembered them, because I have to remember, when I went to France in 42, I hadn't been in France for 10 years. And I was 22, I think, when I got to France, or 23. And things, you know, from a schoolboy. And it wasn't a part, I went to a part of France I'd never been to anyway. I'd never been to Lyon, or Loche, and so on. Then I had to change trains at Châteauroux. And, of course, looking back at the time, I couldn't believe I was really in France. In the middle of a war, and I said, I can't be here, this must be here. That's where the title from that documentary came from. Tommy, I said, Brian, you must be dreaming. This can't be happening to you. I mean, how did I get here? This many times, I think it sort of saved me in a way. Because that's where they used it for this, you know, Brian, you're dreaming.
Title of the film. Did you make contact with the Vomica all right?
Well, no, I didn't. See, I arrived in Limoges. I remember I was a day late. So apparently he wasn't expecting me anymore. And I'd been forbidden to contact him in his home. Because he didn't want to. He was insecure and so on. And it was too dangerous. And I had a meeting with him at some, let me see, where, in Limoges, it's a cafe terrace. That evening, because he was supposed to, you know, tell me where to stay and so on, and I was reporting to him, in fact, and I had no alternative. And I was supposed to be on a certain, at a cafe terrace on a certain size in Limoges, with two Signal magazines in my hand. So he, you know, who, and so I got to the appointment at the right time, and nothing happened. And it turned out eventually, I found out that he wasn't expecting me, but he said he'd have a quick look anyway. But he didn't bother to look on all, you know, there were, I think, two terraces. And he didn't see me. Well, I didn't know what to do. I hadn't eaten. I discovered my ration tickets were out of date. And I'd been told not to sleep in hotels because that was dangerous. And so I used to sleep under hedge. There was a full summer anyway, but trying to look sort of tidy, you know. And then I went to a couple of times. I took the train to Lyon back, first class night train.
Any reason why first class?
Because I thought I'd probably be less, as I recall, be, I've forgotten why, I thought I'd probably be safer. But it was also, I took night train so I could sleep. it was something to do anyway, because rather than hang around, because Limoges, you know, you feel it was quite a small town in those days. And this went on, and I don't know who to contact. There's no one to contact. I had got Philippe's home address, which is Chateau Bassolet. So eventually, after I think I don't know about 10 days of this harrowing, and I was getting very ill with all these just eating peaches and sleeping on the hedges, and so I went to his hotel, to his home. I remember walking, we got out, I've forgotten the name of the whole village, took the train there and then walked out through the countryside, beautiful evening, to his chateau. And he was absolutely furious. But there's nothing we could do, so I spent nothing, and there was no alternative.
Who was he furious with?
With me, and with London. And I was furious with him too, of course, for not turning up. But anyway, his wife was there, and she put me up. And the next day, he arranged for me to go to Lyon. You know, arranged within the wet, and that was okay. And he took me to a black market meal of in Limoges. That's a gesture, I think, you know. And of course, by that time, I wasn't used to eating it, probably, so I threw up. I mean, conspicuous a spy.
So how did you solve your food problem eventually?
Well, after the this lunch, that afternoon, first de Vaumécourt arranged for me a safe place to sleep at a widow's. And I was to stay there till I received my pain box transmitter from Loche, and he arranged for a courier to go and get it. That would take a couple of days. And meanwhile, I had to solve the problem of the ration tickets. And he told me to go to the food office and exchange my phony out-of-date ration tickets for the new set for July. So I went there rather, you know, as it says here, rather excited. And apparently there was no problem at all. I got the girl behind the counter didn't even, you know, just gave me the new set. So I was okay for food and somewhere to sleep while waiting for my transmitter to arrive with this courier.
Can you say where you had left your transmitter?
The transmitter was left at the landing place near Loche with the landing committee, the French people there.
How long did it take before you got the transmitter?
2 or 3 days, I would say, as I recall.
How did you spend your time in the meantime?
In the meantime, I went, I spent in Limoges, I would go to, I do shopping, you know, do a lot of shopping, buy stuff I didn't need, like perfume, for instance. It says, I bought some Schiaparelli perfume, God knows why, except for something to do. Went to the movies a lot, you know. I remember seeing Meierling, a film I'd already seen in London in 39, with Charles Royer and Daniel Darieux. And I still have. I bought a couple of. I used to buy some books on art, various, you know, drawings and so on. And I started sketching to build up my character as an artist. You know, do some rough sketches and so on.
Did you have any problems about adjusting yourself to the rationing regulations?
Well, yes, I had problems in what I did also this time was trying to find out exactly what was available. For instance, a lot of the time was spent, especially in the summer, and There you weren't conspicuous at all at cafe terraces, because all Frenchmen spent half their lives at cafe terraces. But you'd have to know what to order and the price of things and so on, to be inconspicuous. So I'd found out what was available, what were the habits, you know, the ways of doing things, because I hadn't been told that in London.
Do you think it should have been possible to have trained you in all that type of thing before you went?
Well, I think so, but you have to remember, this was still pretty early in the game. This was July 42, and there wasn't that much information available, in fact. How I was sent to France with these old food, you know, things that I don't understand. And another gaffe was, you know, my conspicuous shoes. Also, looking back, you see, except you probably didn't make it, I was much too tall for the average Frenchman of that period. See, I'm 6'2", almost. And there just weren't any Frenchmen, except Charles de Gaulle. Nobody was that tall. I mean, it's not, I should have been much shorter to be inconspicuous.
Did you feel that people were staring at you?
Not particularly. It's just something I thought about later, actually. No, in fact, I think I was pretty inconspicuous on the whole.
How did things continue from then on?
Well, once I received my radio set that this courier bought, Gauthier sent me to Lyon to contact a Frenchman whose nom de guerre was Joseph.
Who sent you there?
De Vermicourt. By the way, De Vermicourt's name, I have it down here all the time, was Gauthier. I knew him at first as Gauthier, but in fact he's Philippe de Vermicourt. His brother died last year, Pierre de Vermicourt. And we had an appointment with this Joseph in the Café Terrace, as usual, up near the Place Bellecour in Lyon. And and he kept me waiting, which was annoying, as I was still rather nervous about my appearance.
Who was this Joseph?
Well, Joseph was the head, I discovered, of Citroën. His name was Joseph Aron.
How do you spell Aron?
Aron. He was Jewish, actually. But he looked like a sort of typical German, you know, with very close-cropped hair and cold blue eyes and so on. And then that same day, Joseph and my new courier, who was from Nice, he was a young college student, age 20, named Gontran. The three of us, Joseph, Gontran, and myself, we went, we took the bus to a little place called Vienne, which is on the south of Lyon. Vienne used to have a famous restaurant called La Pyramide. I think it's still one of the great French restaurants, Chez Vienne. Chez Point, it was called. That's right, Chez Point. Anyway, we went to this chateau called Hurlevent.
Called?
Hurlevent, which is a howling wind, which is on the, it was an old chateau on the overlooking the Nice, the Lyon-Nice railway line, that valley of the Rhône. And Wuthering Heights, I suppose you could call it.
And were you going to operate in the Vienne area?
Yeah. This was about 8 kilometers out south of Lyon. We went by bus, a crowded bus, to this chateau. And so there, you know, it was people living there was Monsieur and Madame Journal, and she was a very good-looking and blonde, who later on proved to be very cool, clear-headed and courageous under the most nerve-wracking circumstances. Her husband, Louis, was sort of older, a very, you know, wealthy Lyonnais.
So these were the local resistance people in...
Well, these, yeah, Lyonnais. Right. And this is where I was supposed to operate from, the chateau. In fact, I stayed there for 3 weeks at Hurlevent, and that's why, you know, contacted London from there for the first 3 weeks. I suppose this was by this time was the end of July, beginning of August, 42.
How often would you make these contacts with London?
I don't remember often. Eventually, every day, I think later on. But I can't remember my timetable, my schedule, my skeds.
Was it easy to get through?
No, it was difficult to get through, as I recall originally. But I did. But I don't have any details about any of my transmissions.
I think you were saying that you also tried to establish a base in Lyon as well.
That's
as
right.
Vienne.
You're right. I stayed in Hurlevent for 3 weeks, transmitting and receiving on my radio, though I had some difficulty at first in getting in touch with London. And Gontran kept in touch with Joseph in Lyon, bringing messages and getting replies and so on. And he was doing his courier job, in fact. And I went into Lyon quite often looking for an apartment, for a flat, buying painting materials and looking for black market restaurants. Because one of the, I was told in London, you know, don't stint on food. You know, that's what this money was for. You know, your work was most important, eat well. That's one of the maxims of... And not waste a lot of time, you know, scrounging around buying food. Because there were black market restaurants where you could get fabulous, anything you wanted, for 120 francs, which was a lot of money in those days. And, of course, I was kept very busy transmitting at the end of the month, end of July, because it's always at the end of the month, you know, it's the busiest time for the parachutage.
Why was that?
Because... that's when most of the agents were dropped, towards the end of the month, the full moon, I suppose. I used to cycle into Lyon with the Jourdans. And during this period, I met various agents. Then... I suppose in August I was found another chateau to broadcast from, the Chateau de Saint-Laurent-Chamousset.
Where was that?
This is also near Lyon. It was a chateau belonging to the Comte and Comtesse de Saint-Victor, and it had been completely restored by Viollet-le-Duc. Still there, it's a beautiful place. And she's still alive, by the way, the old Comtesse. And it says I was assigned to the Pompadour room, which is furnished Louis XV style, and
in the Lyon area you didn't run into Tony Brooks again, did you?
No, I didn't. At least I don't think so. Because it says that during that period I met various other agents, but I don't specify which. Who, I mean. Sometime that summer I did meet... I don't have a strange brother who lives in Paris, and that you're going to.
Shepherd?
No, not Shepherd.
Oh, Cowburn?
Carbon. Benny Carbon. That seems to me I met that that summer sometime. I don't know whether it was, or maybe it was only in September. And but other agents, I don't know what that means. At this chateau, Salon-en-Chamou, we say I plugged my transmitter in, but no one had told me that the current in the chateau was direct current, not AC, just DC. So I damaged my set. Now I had to wait to get another one. But anyway, apparently I got another one because I transmitted from there and then also from in Lyon. I moved to a hotel in the village, nearby village also. See, one had to keep moving around. And, in actual fact, the safest place to work, to transmit, was not from chateaus or anywhere isolated in the country, but from apartment buildings in a big city, because you could be pinned down in a chateau much too easily, because there was nowhere else. Whereas an apartment building, they could pin down the building, but not the apartment, and that's how I got caught by them, because I didn't follow those rules.
Had you been told that before you went?
I had, but it was, I think I had, I can't remember. I must have. But there wasn't that much choice, actually. There again, you see, at the time, Lyon was highly disorganized because this was the free zone, and the whole thing, coming on onto it a little later here, but the way of life in those that particular summer, 42, when there were no German uniforms visible, this was the so-called unoccupied zone, and the French were trying to carry on this sort of everyday normal life, you know. For instance, it was sort of strange not seeing all the girls in flower dresses, something you never saw in this country because everybody was in uniform. This whole trying to ignore the war, you see, and
So it was a real peacetime atmosphere in a way.
yeah, but it was sort of sinister because people would talk, but you had the feeling that no one really said what they thought because they, you know, the Gestapo or whoever was there in civilian clothes, you couldn't tell because they were, though you never saw any uniforms, one knew that there were Germans around, obviously.
Did you have many narrow escapes or?
No. Not that I can recall at all. It was
What impression did you get about the quality and particularly the level of security of the organization, French organization in the areas where you were working?
not too good, actually. But you see, I only worked in Lyon. And I don't remember the details.